KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
This is
Alrighty, hello everybody, it's Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia 89.5 FM. Wonderful to be with you tonight. I want to say a quick thank you to Debbie Johnson, as always. Free Range Radio Theater starting things off at 10 p.m., 1 hour before this program every Monday night. Free Range Radio Theater, you can check out Debbie and Wonderful Radio Theater. Monday nights, setting things up for Radio Orbit, and we love Debbie, and I'm pleased to follow her up every week. Tonight, what you do? Kurt Vonnegut, of course, right? And Shackley, I forget the guy's first name. Robert, right? Robert Shackley. Anyway, before that, Kelvin and Jason, Jazz plus Blues equals Spring Fever, Tech Radio. As always, interesting stuff, keeping us up on the jaw-dropping world of high technology. Jeff Wheeler starts things off with Uncommon Light, 3 to 5 p.m. every Monday. Great radio on KOPN, your imagination station. Glad to be here and a part of it all with y'all. Thanks to everyone who listened and enjoyed the program last week. A big old thank you to my friend Kent Stedman, a true bard if there ever were one. Always check out what Kent's up to over at cyberspaceorbit.com. That's the place where he makes his marks, and it's always interesting to see what Kent's up to. So cyberspaceorbit.com, big thank you to Kent, and I love you, my friend. All right, we also heard great independent music, as always. Last week, Noah Earle, new music from his CD, Postcards from Home. Congratulations to Noah for a great piece of art there. We, around town here and in this part of the, you know, the world, we were all waiting for quite a while to hear that new disc from Noah Earle, and it was really worth the wait, and great new stuff from Noah Earle. Thank you, Noah, and congratulations. If you missed the program last week, it's all on the web, www.mikehagan.com, in the program archives. Go check it out for yourselves. Share it with your pals if you like. And tonight, let's see, we'll start things off right off the bat with our guest, Susan Weed. She'll be with us in just a few minutes, and I'll tell you a little bit more about her in just a sec. But music tonight, Devochka, the lovely music of Devochka, a Colorado band I was introduced to last year, and one who I think you'll hear more from. If you don't know them already, I have a feeling you'll hear more from these guys and girls. They're great. And we open the show there with a song called Queen of the Surface Streets from Una Volta. Beautiful music, and we'll hear a whole lot more of that throughout this program tonight. By the way, you can find information about all the music I feature on the program as well on the website. And like I said, just go to the music archives, again, at Mike Hagan, MikeHagan.com. And that's the way to do it, all right? Just go there and listen. Okay, we've got the stream up, KOPN.org, if you're listening on the web, thanks. Also, Cosmic Waves Radio, sending the stream out from Amsterdam and China and Philadelphia and all over the place, and people listening from everywhere, and the chat room's up, and join us over there if you like. So we'll get with it, though. Anyway, okay, her name is Susan Weed. She's an author, a speaker, a brilliant herbalist, and a lady who is recognized around the world as a gifted teacher of arts of the earth. I was introduced to her only recently by a listener, and I'm very pleased that she's joining us tonight. We'll let her tell us a lot more about herself, but I know that she is a wise woman, and we welcome her to Radio Orbit. Susan, hello. It is a pleasure to have you on the program.
Green blessings. I'm so glad to be with you this evening.
Thank you so much. It's midnight, quarter after coming up on now on the East Coast where you're speaking with us from, so I appreciate you staying up late in the night for us.
No problem.
Where are you at, Susan?
I'm in the Catskill Mountains of New York State.
Wow.
In the Hudson River Valley.
Are you having intense weather up there right now?
We're having very intense weather. There's all kinds of flooding. I was saying this morning, looking out at the front of my property, that I should be selling lakefront property.
Really?
Yes, it's really quite the intense rainfall. I hear that the National Guard has been called out and that there's a... Oh, I think 9 people dead from the flooding at this point.
My gosh, yeah, I know
yeah.
That it was supposed to be a storm of sort of epic proportions, but I didn't realize you were right there in the middle of it, though.
Yes, indeed. And so far, the electricity has stayed on, and, you know, it's one of those things where I've been mildly chastising myself for not getting out there and planting my early garden, and now I'm so glad I didn't.
Well, you know, it's funny because in Missouri here,
you know, we're in the heartland here, right in the middle of Missouri, and I planted about just over 2 weeks ago, and we had a really warm March, and I waited till till the first week of April, like I typically do, and guess what? It got really cold, and barely my plants made it, but it was for three nights in a row. Last week it was 11 degrees, 15 degrees, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, and there's been a tremendous amount of damage to fruit crops and that sort of thing here. Anything that
blossomed.
Oh, man, it was a bummer. Because, you know, because March was so warm, everything got going early, you know.
Right.
Anyway, so there's been, you know, anyway, there's a whole lot going on. Blackberry problems and peach trees and the apples, of course, you know. Anyway, so
things are changing, and it's difficult for us to adapt.
Isn't that the truth?
Without adapt.
Well, we're gonna, you know, we're supposed to be clever monkeys. So
there you go.
So we'll see if we can talk about some of that tonight. Let's first start off though at the beginning. For me as well as my listeners, I was only recently introduced to you. I've snooped around your website like I do, and I've read some of the things that I found there and followed some of the links, and I'd just like you please to tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from, and how you got on the path that you're on, and then we'll go from there, if you would, please.
Yes, it's a really amazing website put together by my daughter. It's about 700 pages of absolutely free information there.
And let's, Susan, let's give that out really fast. It's www.susan, S-U-S-U-N, WEED.com, SusanWeed.com, but it's Susan, S-U-S-U-N, and people need to sort of make a note of that.
Great, thank you. That's perfect.
Okay, so back to it.
Yeah, and I was born in Ohio on the shores of Lake Erie, and when I was very young, moved to Dallas, Texas. And I grew up there within earshot of the zoo, so that I went to sleep with the sounds of lions and tigers and elephants in my ears.
Interesting.
And I don't know if it was this or a small, you know, 5-acre piece of property at the end of my block that I had access to, but it seemed to me that throughout my childhood, I could always turn to nature for solace. And it wasn't that I necessarily thought about that in terms of any kind of career. When I was in college, I was a mathematics major, specializing in computers and artificial intelligence. And I left that because I found natural intelligence more fascinating.
What do you mean by natural intelligence?
The intelligence of human beings. The intelligence of nature. The intelligence of plants and animals.
Most people say that's silliness, you know, the idea of a plant actually having intelligence, much less you know, consciousness or something like that.
Not among the people I hang out with.
And, you know, frankly, not among the people that listen to this program either.
I bet.
But, you know, for the people who have yet to figure these things out, let's talk a little bit about that, intelligence in nature.
Well, you know, my green book, Healing Wise, which is a general purpose herbal for everyone, and which discusses one of my really good ideas, which is the three traditions of healing. This book, Healing Wise, talks about, you know, not only the three traditions of healing, but how to just use really simple things that are right around you for yourself, health and well-being. And it has the plants talk to you. And when I did that, you know, all of my, well, not all of my, but some of my herbal buddies, begged me not to.
Why?
Because even to them it seemed silly to have a book where the plants were talking to you.
You know,
like Dandelion is Dr. Dandelion. He is from France, you know, and he is a pizzer.
Hmm.
So So, you know, he takes you on a guided tour and tells you various things about how to use Dandelion's power.
Yeah.
And the sister spinster stinging nettle, who will draw your attention by stinging you if you don't pay attention to her. And there's the shy violet who hides in the woods and who's so cool and soothing.
You know, Susan, there is a Native American tradition that's close to my heart, and they talk about if you walk through the forest with an open heart, the plant that you need will stand up and show itself to you.
Oh, how beautiful.
And the more in my own life that I over the last 5 years moved from sort of a city setting out to a rural setting, you know, sort of in the woods, essentially. And I'm finding this more and more in my own experience. But maybe you could talk a little bit about that. There's an herbal tradition I know that goes back many, many hundreds of years that sort of says that the plants that you need will sort of show up around you. You just have to be able to recognize who they are and what they're there for.
The only correction I would make to that is not that they will show up, but they probably already are there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, okay.
As a matter of fact, if someone has lived in a place for more than 3 years, I can tell them what their health problems are likely to be by what plants are there.
Huh.
And in what proportions.
Very interesting.
Because the plants, you know, have agreed to help us.
Mm.
And there's a wonderful, I say, the giveaway dance between plants and people. Because what we breathe out, the plants breathe in.
Right.
And what we breathe in, the plants breathe out.
Mm.
And we're not just talking like fanciful stuff here. We're talking real material stuff, right?
Right, exactly.
Atoms of carbon and oxygen.
Mm.
Star stuff. Carbon and oxygen. And we take it into our bodies. We take these atoms into our bodies. We make ourselves of these atoms. And then we exchange them with the plants.
Hmm.
And every breath is a giveaway dance. From the first breath that we are given from the plants when we're born to the very last breath that we exhale and give back to the plants and the world and the universe when we die.
Amazing. Wow. All right, well.
So you wanted to know a little bit about me.
Absolutely.
I got started in herbal medicine because my best friend forced me.
Where'd you grow up?
As I said, I grew up in Dallas, Texas.
That's right, okay.
And then I went to UCLA.
Uh-huh.
Majored in mathematics there and computer science. If you'd ever told
that's
me,
so funny,
that,
no,
you know, back then, this is back in the early 60s, if you'd ever told me that I would ever carry a computer around on an airplane, I probably, you know, would have laughed till I wet my pants.
Well, you know, I have a degree in mathematics too, believe it or not, and I carry a computer now around too, thanks to some of my great friends. But at any rate, I'm glad I learned the math that I did, but I sort of use it in a counterintuitive way these days. So anyway, so UCLA, and then
I moved to Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I was pregnant, and I got pregnant while I was taking birth control pills.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah, I was one of the first groups of American women to take birth control pills. And they kind of didn't believe I could be pregnant. And I'm a big, tall, strongly built woman.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't really obvious, even though I kept insisting. And finally, when I was 5 months pregnant, it was pretty obvious I was indeed pregnant. This was way before sonograms or any way that we had any idea what taking birth control pills could possibly have done to my fetus, my baby.
Right.
And, of course, this was right in the middle of the thalidomide.
Huh.
And for those of you who don't know, thalidomide was a drug that was given to healthy pregnant women and caused their children to be born without arms and or legs.
Yeah, just a horrible thing.
Truly, and the newspapers were just full of pictures of these children. And here I am, carrying this child. I've been taking birth control pills. I don't know what's going to happen to her. So guess what I didn't want to take any of?
What?
Drugs.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right?
At least the ones pumped out by Merck or whoever.
Like, none. None. So I went to, you know, up the stairs between the Stone Lions in Manhattan into the public library, and I asked for books about herbs.
Mm.
And the librarian looked through the card catalog and brought me all four books that they had about herbs. Now, of course, I've now written more than that. I've written Why is the Limb Herbal for the Childbearing Year, which now is something like its 32nd printing. It's just back on press. And then the Green Book, Healing Wise, that we were just talking about. And then Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, which came out, 12 years before the study confirming that taking estrogen was bad for you, came out saying taking estrogen is bad for you and urging women not to take it. And then Breast Cancer, Breast Health, The Wise Woman Way. And then Menopausal Years was replaced by New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way. But back then, I took those books home to my apartment on the Lower East Side, and I read them, and they told me to put basil with my tomatoes and dill with my cucumbers, which is very good advice, but it wasn't really the advice I was looking for.
In other words, grow those things together?
Well,
Or eat them together?
Eat them together.
Okay.
Eat them together, because here I am in Manhattan. I'm certainly not able to grow anything.
Mm-hmm.
And not without, I'm not saying that nobody in Manhattan could, but I was basically in a tenement on the Lower East Side.
Right, I understand, okay.
And lucky to have a square of sunlight for myself, let alone any plants.
Okay.
And I did, in fact, after a couple of years say, well, I have to grow these, I have to get up to the country. And I did manage to do that, to come up to the area. As a matter of fact, the first place that I rented is a mile from the farm that I eventually bought.
Hmm.
And there I had my very first garden and planted seeds. And when the seeds came up, lo and behold, a lot of other things came up with them.
Yeah.
As any gardener can tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Plant a seed, get 20 plants of many different things.
Right.
And being such a novice gardener, well, I had no idea what was what. Fortunately for me, along came books by Ewell Gibbons.
Huh. The Grape Nuts Guy, for everyone out there. I date myself.
The Grape Nuts Guy.
Right?
He was such a wonderful spokesperson for the safety of being outdoors and eating wild foods.
Uh-huh.
I remember someone once said to him, you shouldn't do this. This is irresponsible. You're talking about wild foods, and people could eat the wrong thing and poison themselves.
Yeah.
And he, kind of, with that, lovely smile of his, and twinkly eyes, said, well, they just have to learn them one at a time.
Isn't that the truth?
And just,
Right?
Like anything, right. Well, it's such a beautiful thing to say. Well, don't just go out there and, eat anything, like any chump. Learn them one at a time. Make them your friends, and then use them. So you basically convinced me that the weeds that were growing in my garden were actually better than the basil and the dill. And that I should pay more attention to the chickweed and the dandelion and the yellow dock and the burdock and the red clover and the poke.
So this is a hint of advice that for people, when in your gardens, in our gardens, when things start to pop up that aren't things that we planted, what do we do with those things? Susan, talk more about that.
I call it warfare gardening.
What do you mean?
It's exactly what we did in Vietnam. You kill everything except the things you want.
But that's what we don't want to do, right?
That's what you don't want to do, but
that's what people typically practice.
That's what's typically practiced, even on organic farms.
Okay, all right. So
it's warfare gardening.
All right.
We have a favorite thing, and that thing is going
to
live,
our whole culture,
and everything else is going to go.
Right.
One of my favorite books is a book called Weeds by Joseph Kochenour, and he talks about, as a young boy, there in the heartland, he was paid to hoe the purslane out from among the corn.
Hmm.
You're probably familiar with purslane. It's looks like a succulent. Looks like it should grow in the desert. It has thick red stalks and kind of oval, fleshy green opposite leaves on it. Rather low growing, and really spreads out from the center. And he noticed that there was one farmer who didn't pay him to hoe the cornfields. And he said to him, you know, what's the matter with you? And the man says, well, look, my corn does better.
Huh.
And, you know, young Joe's like, what? And the man said to him, that purse lane, it never grows above 5 or 6 inches tall. It's not going to compete with corn. But it's going to shade those corn roots and act as a mulch to keep the water in.
Hmm.
Now, he didn't know that if he ate the purslane, he would be eating the plant richest in omega-3 fatty acids. And, of course, omega-3 fatty acids, having a diet high in omega-3 fatty acids and low in omega-6 fatty acids, is one of the keys to a long, pain-free, enjoyable life.
Hmm.
That's one of the main reasons for having some wild foods in our diet.
Mm-hmm. So,
So there I was, eating the weeds, and and I had to make some money. So I started teaching bread baking classes.
Now, is your name really Susan Weed? People are asking.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It was just about that time when I started teaching that my husband and I decided that since I was resigning as wife in terms of doing all the cooking and doing all the picking up and all of that,
right.
And he wanted to have a wife, that we, you know, might as well go our separate ways, since I didn't want to play the role of wife. Not that I didn't want to have anything to do with him, I just didn't want to be in that role.
Right, I understand.
Right, it's like, I resign as wife.
Uh-huh.
So we separated, but we continued to live in a tiny community of less than 100 people.
And you had children,
scattered
at least one.
Up a mountain, and you had to go to the post office, which was at the bottom of the mountain, to pick up your mail.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in the post office one morning, and Dot Quick said to me, look, when the mail comes into Southworth Swede, I give it to him. When the mail comes in for Susan Swede, I give it to you. When it comes into S. Swede, I don't know which of you to give it to. Would you change your name, please? So I said, sure, I'll be Susan S. Weed. That's not a problem.
Right.
So it was a, you know, small move from Swede to Weed.
Right.
And the S in the middle stands in for my maiden name. So that also worked out very perfectly.
And interestingly, I mean, how far along the plant path were you at that point when you chose the? In other words, was it a conscious choice, really? In other words, were you thinking
it
about the
plant? It was
a
very conscious choice because I knew that I love the weeds.
Okay. Yeah.
I had not yet realized that I could, as it were, be a voice for the weeds.
Mm-hmm.
Like Yule Gibbons, you know, it was just that I felt like so infused with joy about the gifts of the earth. And so I was in a tight money situation. I started teaching at community colleges. I taught bread baking.
Mm-hmm.
And then they asked me if I'd teach homesteading and then mushroom foraging.
Mm.
And I was having a great time teaching all of those things. And my best friend was bemoaning her life as a mother of 2 children in diapers and a not very understanding husband. And I said, well, you just have to leave him alone with the kids, you know, occasionally, and he'll get a lot more understanding. And she said, yeah, well, how could I do that? And I said, well, you have to teach at a community college. You can, you know, just have a class that goes for, you know, one evening a week for 6 weeks. It'll just give him a little taste of it.
Mm-hmm.
So she thought about it. She decided she was going to teach herbal medicine.
Right.
And she said, so that means you and I have to study real hard. One of the reasons we were best friends was because of our interest in herbal medicine and wild foods. So we went out every single day for the next 4 months, rain or shine, and walked the fields and the woods of the beautiful Catskill Mountains, finding and identifying, eating and brewing up plants.
Hmm.
There was one soup that we spilled. I tell you, it was the best floor cleaner you've ever seen.
Huh.
People stopped coming over around dinner time because of the strange concoctions we were making. But we and our children just had a marvelous time. She taught her class on herbal medicine. He got a taste of what it was like to be alone with a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Hmm.
And their marriage improved so much that they went away on a summer vacation, and she called me 2 weeks before her class was to begin and told me she wasn't coming home. I had to teach the class.
Amazing.
And I said I couldn't possibly do that. I didn't know enough. And she said, you know as much as I do, go teach the class. To this day, you know, 35 years later, she still says it's one of the best things that she ever did in her life was to force me to start teaching herbal medicine.
Remarkable. Susan, that's a great place to take a break, okay?
Okay.
Let's do it. We'll come back. We'll play a piece of music here, and we'll talk a little bit more in just a minute, all right?
Okay.
Okay, everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. On the web, kopn.org, we're lucky enough to have Susan Weed with us for a short time tonight, and we'll come back with her in just a few minutes, okay? In the meantime, this is Devochka. Again, this is from a CD called Una Volta, the song The Oblivion. We'll be back in a few minutes with Susan Weed on the web, by the way, at www.susan, S-U-S-N, I'm sorry, S, the, all right, blah, 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 back up, S-U-S-U-N, WEED.com, SusanWeed.com, all right? And, of course, you can link over there from my site, always at MikeHagan.com. And one more time with Devochka. The song is called The Oblivion. We'll be back in a few minutes with Susan Weed. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
Impossible to withstand when you're holding my heart.
Hi, everybody. Hi, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. That was The Oblivion, a song from Una Volta, the band Devochka. And you can find information about them on the web at Devochka, devochka.net. You can link there from my site as well at the in the music archives. And I think you can probably find them on MySpace, like everything else. Okay? All right. Let's see. KOPN.org, by the way, if you want to catch the live stream. Wonderful stuff that we're doing these days, broadcasting from mid-Missouri, out and about in the Midwest here, but also now streaming live on the web and all around the world. It's just remarkable, you know, what we're able to do these days. The technology cuts both ways, as all things, but we're trying to do our best with it, and I'm sure glad that that we're sending the signal out to people who couldn't hear it before. So anyway, Susan Weed is with us. Her website is www.susanweed, SusanWeed.com, and we'll get right back to her. Susan, hi.
Hi, green blessings.
Thank you. Okay, so your friend nails you, and you're off on...
Force me into it.
Yeah, and you're off on your way. So now, I'm sure we'll fill in a lot of the gaps in between, but I have a couple of sort of pressing questions that people are forcing at me here, and I'm going to ask you one really quickly about the honeybee situation. Do you have any inkling of what might be going on there? Maybe explain to people who aren't even familiar that something is going on.
Well, first of all, I think we have to understand that honeybees are not native to North America.
Is that right?
Honeybees were brought here from Europe. And with the introduction of the honeybee, the native bees, which are much better pollinators, were put into decline.
Hmm.
I certainly feel badly for the honeybees, and they are having terrific problems. And I don't in any way want to downplay that. I have friends who've lost 90% of their honeybees over the past 10 years, despite strenuous efforts to keep them going. But what has happened is that a tremendous number of the native bees have come back on the scene.
Which is good.
Well, good, bad.
Yeah, I mean, in other words...
You know, it's more natural, we could say. We don't get honey from them, but they do a really good job of pollinating, and they're more suited to the native plants, and they help especially in areas where there's problem with invasive non-native plants.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, as you were saying about technology, it cuts both ways.
Hmm.
But when people say, oh, without the honeybees, we won't have food, that simply isn't true.
Mm-hmm. It's a matter of what is being pollinated and what we should be growing versus what we are growing, this sort of thing.
Well, these native bees are good pollinators, even of the cultivated crops.
Okay. But they don't produce honey. This is the big...
But they don't produce honey. That is true. And they don't like to be...
corralled.
Yeah.
You know, you want to hear something really funny? You know, in my little garden, I guess it was Sunday or Saturday morning, I was out there fiddling around, and a little honeybee came up. And to be honest, a bee came up. I don't know if it was a honeybee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, what the hell do I know? I don't know him well enough. But a bee came up, and I sort of said in my head to the bee, what's going on with you guys? You know?
Yeah.
You know? And this is going to sound silly, but the message was sort of like this. The bee said, well, we're okay. We're just sort of fed up. And I honestly, I got this intuition that they were just sort of leaving and going elsewhere. It wasn't like they were all dying, that they were just going somewhere else and saying, we're not going to deal with these people anymore or something. I don't know. Anyway, so... So regardless, there's
perhaps a slight element of hidden guilt in that story.
Perhaps, though. Yes.
And we're allowed to be animals.
All right.
We're not only animals, but we are allowed to live and breathe and eat and excrete without guilt.
But with respect.
Absolutely. absolutely. One of my apprentices right now is a vegan. She's having a very difficult time here.
I mean, everything's alive.
Because
life feeds on life.
Exactly. Because life must eat life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the pretense that animal life is somehow better than plant life already sets us up to be outside of wholeness.
Right, I agree.
And outside of sacredness.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, you know, maybe if they had asked me how to set it up, maybe I wouldn't have set it up that way. Because
mm-hmm.
I can see that there are people who feel tenderly toward things. And, you know, really, it's hard for them that they have to consume other life. I really understand that. But on the other hand, I feel that it's, as you say, with respect, that it's part of being alive.
Well,
because they didn't ask me. That's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Maybe you could talk a little bit about ritual and mythology. In other words, this is what the ritual is for, you know, to make it sacred, to make it okay.
Exactly. You know, I live on a homestead.
Mm-hmm.
We don't grow our own grain or our own hay, so it's a homestead, not a farm. But I do keep a herd of dairy goats.
Yes, I know you have goats, yeah.
Yeah, and we make our own cheese and our own yogurt. And
goat milk is supposed to be wonderful for children.
Oh, goat milk, as far as I'm concerned, is wonderful for anybody at any time and is the essence of herbal medicine, in fact, because the goats eat huge varieties of wild plants.
Yeah, they eat everything. That's the whole...
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
Amazing.
So, you know, the apprentices move in the cycle of life and death here and understand that the things that we can't eat in the garden, like the grasses, go to feed the rabbits, which turn that plant material that we humans can't consume into good quality meat protein for us.
Mm-hmm. And fertilizer for the ground.
And fertilizer for the plants that we can eat, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's all in a cycle. It's all in a spiral. And the spiral is part of the wise woman tradition.
Mm.
That just as the circle is the heroic tradition and the line is the scientific tradition.
Mm. Yes, the linear idea.
Yes, linear, you know, health in the scientific tradition is not being sick. So we have to be measured. We have to see if we fit in the parameters. And if we don't, then we have to be fixed. And then in the heroic tradition, we have to be cleansed. Because we are sinners. We are inherently bad. We inherently do the wrong thing.
Right, born broken.
We have to have strict rules. We have to follow those rules. And in a lot of heroic traditions, there's an absolute fear of animal products as though they would cause a human to somehow become animalistic and lose humanness. The milk and eggs especially, which are produced by women. And so to me, the fear or the rejection of milk and eggs as good quality foods is really the fear and rejection of femaleness in women. You know, there was that ice cream son, Mr. Robbins, who wrote a book saying that people shouldn't eat these kinds of foods. I have a special hell reserved for him. He gets food stamps and four children under the age of six. And he gets to try to feed them a good quality, adequate diet without milk and eggs.
Mm-hmm. I love milk and eggs.
And people say, well, the animals are mistreated. And I say, well, in America, you vote with your dollars.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't consume milk and you don't consume eggs and you don't consume meat, then you have no say in how the animals are raised.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you know the work of Sally Fallon.
I don't.
Oh, well, check her out. A really amazing woman, a lipid chemist. And she and I, among other people, have been really devoted for over a decade now to spreading the word on eating meat and how much better animals will be treated if people of good conscience eat meat and demand well-kept meat. And that is exactly what has happened. I can now walk into almost any supermarket anywhere in the United States and get, if not organic, at least free-range grass-fed meat.
Yeah, we have locally grown, you know, free-range cattle and wonderful beef here in Missouri. And, of course, like you say, you have to be paying attention. You have to want to buy that particular product, but it's certainly available for those who are willing, you know.
Exactly. And it costs more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. so then you'll eat less of it.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is not to have a diet that's 100% meat, but to include some, partly out of acknowledgement and honor to the animals and to the people who keep them. And anybody who's ever kept any kind of farm animal can tell you it's a lot of work
mm-hmm.
for not much reward, except for the sheer joy of seeing baby goats leaping about in my yard. And nothing beats a baby goat for exuberance. Have you been around them?
I haven't.
Imagine a small, a tiny, tiny miniature goat weighing 7 or 8 pounds, leaping 4 to 5 feet up in the air, clicking its heels, spinning around, and coming down with a laugh. That's a baby goat.
I like it. It reminds me of like the Rudolph animation.
Yes.
When he says, "She likes me," and Clarice and him jump around, you know, and fly. And it's amazing, and it's interesting because right now out at my place, you know, we live on, I guess I'd call it a homestead. I mean, in my definition. But anyway, you know, we're out in the woods, and we sort of have lots of critters, and we have cats that hang around. And there's this one particular cat who, you know, she thinks that she runs the place, but you know, she just sort of comes up on the deck every other day, and we give her some food and stuff, and she doesn't come in the house. But she's sort of, you know, she's sort of our cat. Anyway, she's had kittens just a couple, maybe 10 days ago or so, and you know, she's doing it. She had four originally, and only two of them have survived this far, and I think these two will be fine. But the spring is amazing, and it's brutal at the same time. You know, people talk about the love and the beauty and the life affirmingness of spring, but there's also this, you know, as always, the other side of it too. But that's part of the deal.
Well, actually, you know, spring is almost over.
Talk about that. We talked about that off the air. Please talk about the solstices and the equinoxes and how it all falls out.
Yeah, let's start with this. Shakespeare wrote a play called Midsummer's Night.
Midsummer Night's Dream, yes.
Which takes place on
June 21st, 22nd, whatever. The
solstice.
Right.
So if summer solstice is midsummer,
not the beginning of summer.
Which it is, because it wouldn't make sense to start summer on the day when the days start getting shorter.
Hmm.
That's what solstice is.
Yeah, right. That's the peak, and then it begins to shorten after that.
So we wouldn't start summer when the days start to get shorter.
Right.
We start summer 6 weeks before then, on May 1st.
So in between the equinox and the solstice is when the beginning is.
Exactly. Those are called the cross-quarter dates.
The cross-quarter dates, yeah.
So May 1st, May Day, is truly the beginning of summer.
Uh-huh.
And that's when we can, in most places, with some hope of success, plant. And, of course, around here and throughout much of the temperate region, it is said that the fairies or the wee folk come out of their hills on May 1st. And if they find you frolicking, having a good time, and bare-bottomed in your garden, then they will come and stay with you for the whole summer.
Right on. Take advice, people.
There you go. Up until the end of October, when they go back in their fairy hills.
I love it. The wee folk. I just love the terms. The fairy folk and the gnomes and the elves and the sprites and the nymphs and all of the creatures of the wood.
And you know, for Americans, fairies and sprites and elves and such are so benign somehow. I think because of Walt Disney. I'm really not sure. But I was very surprised when I was in Ireland and people would say, "Oh, you know, what are you here doing?" And I'd say, "Oh, you know, well, you know, I'm visiting these sites and I'm teaching and I'm here to connect with the fairies." And they would give me this kind of wild-eyed look when I would say that. So finally I said, "Yeah, I better buy a book about Irish fairies." And all the Irish fairy stories, the fairies are like awful, mean, terrible, spiteful, trick-playing creatures.
Tricksters, yeah.
Yes, the she. You know, nobody would want to go looking for the she. You want to stay as far away from them as you can. They're the bad cousin, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, my friend used to tell me, I had an Irish friend that lived in Belfast, and he always said, you have to be very careful when you drive over the grates that they use in the driveway so that the cattle don't cross over, you know?
Yeah.
He said, because the gnomes will hang onto those things with their hands, and if you drive over and run over any of their fingers, they will damn you, and you will be screwed, basically.
Yeah. So, did you have to get out of your car and check
right.
carefully for gnome fingers
exactly.
before
sort of
you drive over?
Yourself, you know? there's all of these amazing mythologies that most people think of as that. I mean, the word mythology, most people take that as something that just isn't real or whatever. But my experience, and certainly many people who I talk to, you know, would say, well, no, these things are real, and it's just a matter of recognizing, acknowledging, and then you'll find out if it's real, sort of.
The human brain and the human psyche, so far as I can see, is constituted to understand reality from many perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
So we can both understand that the chair you're sitting on, say, is quite solid enough to hold you up, and yet at the same time it is not solid because it is made of atoms, which are 99.9% space.
Mm. Right.
So the actual truth of the matter is you are a bunch of space, which is being held up by a bunch of space, which is pretty spacey.
Yeah, the whole thing's just very bizarre when you actually look at the physics of what they think is going on.
Exactly. Yet, you know, we can hold that, and we can also hold the symbolic meaning of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of being held up by something. And what is happening to us when we sit in a chair. I had one teacher who would not teach anyone sitting on a chair. His teacher said, I am not going to teach anyone who's afraid to be in contact with the earth.
That's great.
Right?
Yeah, I love it.
And so, you know, because this is a very American, kind of westernized thing to do, to sit up off the earth, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my mother, who I love so much, in the last month of her life with me to Japan, and her comment on it when we left was, well, I can finally get up off the floor. And it was, you know, I didn't really notice it because I spent a lot of my life on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Very comfortable, much more comfortable sitting out and teaching outside than I am sitting in a chair or being in a classroom.
Yeah, the natural world is where all the teaching is really done.
Well, I love having nature as my co-conspirator, my co-breather,
mm-hmm.
to co-inspire and co-create with my students. I love it. One day I was out with a class, and we were studying spirit healing skills, and we had come to the section where we were talking about chakras and auras.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was that kind of 3:30 in the afternoon where there's another hour and a half of class, but people are kind of drifting. And I said to them, all right, now this is really important, so let's really pay attention, and pay no attention to that squirrel in the tree over there. And someone said, I don't think it's a squirrel. We've been hearing this kind of sound. And just as the person said that, over our heads swooped an owl.
Oh, really?
With the chipmunk dangling from its claw.
Wow.
And landed on the branch right in front of us and proceeded to tear the chipmunk in half and feed half of it to that owlet and then fly to another tree and feed the other half to the other owlet.
Amazing.
And they were just in that stage of being an owlet where they were fledged. Mm-hmm. They had all their own feathers, but they weren't yet hunting for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, to be able to say, well, I think what you're learning here is a lot more important than auras.
Man, oh, man. All right, look, top of the hour. Let's take a real short break here, just a couple minutes, then we'll come back and talk a little bit more, okay?
Okay.
Wow, everybody, excellent stuff. I love it, Susan. Thanks so much. We'll be back in a minute with Susan Weed, www.susunweed.com. You can link over there from my site at MikeHagan.com. And, of course, thanks to everybody out there listening. And in the chat room, we'll snoop over there in a few minutes and grab some more questions. I know there's a lot of comments and questions coming up, and we'll do our best to get to them all, okay? All right, in the meantime, a quick one here from Devochka. This one is called Dangling Feet. It's from, what's the name of this CD? I forget. I don't know. Doesn't matter. A Rose by Any Other Name. This one is Dangling Feet. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back in just a few minutes with Susan Weed. Devochka from Super Melodrama. That's Dangling Feet. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Just a few ticks after midnight now, mid-Missouri time, about 1 a.m. or so in the Catskills, where our friend Susan Weed is talking to us from up there in upstate New York, and it's a pleasure to have her with us and a privilege. And her website, before we get right back to her, is www.susunweed.com. And you can always link over there from my site from here on out. And this program will be archived over there, you know where, in the next day or so. Okay, so anybody who wants to share it with their friends and download it and, you know, send it to MSNBC or whoever. Yeah. Anyway. All right, Susan, hi.
Yeah, we had the Nightline live crew out here last fall.
Oh, I joke because I'm always...
From NBC News, and it was really funny because they were interviewing me about being a witch, and they were, like, so conversant, you know, with all these pagan beliefs, and were really asking very good questions. I'm a high priestess of the Dianic tradition, and they, like, you know, they didn't blink an eye at any of that.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted me to take them for a walk. I took them for a walk out in my woods.
Right.
And we got to the crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to them, now, this path over here to the left goes up to our ritual area, and this path over here to the right is the ferry bypass, and the path in the front you can't go on, because that's where the ferries are. And they got, like, all Google-eyed and went, oh, fairies! And I thought, well, isn't that funny? They're so okay with witches, you know, but the fairies was, like, off their radar.
Right, it's just another word, you know?
Exactly, just another, you know, for me it's like, it's the chaotic aspect of nature. one of my mentors, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, I once asked her, I said, you know, why do people blame themselves for so much stuff that really they, it's just, you know, it's life. It's not them. It's not they're doing wrong or bad. And she said, oh, well, don't you understand that guilt is preferable to chaos? And that so struck me. And I see truly that much of nature is chaos. And much of human nature is to want order. I always love my garden best in the spring. Why? Because I can pretend there's order.
Right.
Right?
Right.
By July, we've given up, haven't we?
Right, everything's out there.
It's like, bah, okay, I can't keep it under control anymore.
Man, that's amazing you say that. I spoke with a friend of mine on the radio about a week and a half ago, and we were talking about this idea of control. And I was trying to state my position, and I, with regard to, you know, global geopolitics and this sort of thing, right? And I said, well, you know, everyone wants to think that someone's in control, whether it's the New World Order or the Masons or the Vatican or the Communist Party or the neocons or the gray-faced aliens or whoever. You know, everyone wants to think that someone's in control. And I said, you know, my position is that the real truth that no one wants to face is that no one's in control.
I say to people who believe in conspiracies, I say, have you ever been at a meeting? What does it take to get more than two humans or even two humans to agree on anything?
Yeah, and to keep a secret.
Or to keep a secret. I mean, oh my goodness.
Right. And I mean, I recognize there are, you know, there are groups that are certainly vying for control and doing whatever they can, and I recognize this, but the fact that they're having any success, this is what, you know.
Given the chaos of human nature.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, okay, well that's very interesting that you say that.
But you know, one of the things that people often say to me is that it is so life-affirming and reassuring to them to know what in their yard they can eat and use as medicine.
Mm, there you go.
Because it
really, sure.
You know, it strikes a blow at the empire.
Mm.
When you know that you don't have to have a prescription to get what you need to get yourself as well as possible.
Mm-hmm. That it's all there.
That it's all there. When you know, what in an emergency you could eat, or what you could eat just because it tastes really good.
Right.
Right, there's just an incredible way that you're empowered. One of my past apprentices who holds a conference called Green Nations, really marvelous conference, one of my favorites, was really involved in bringing all of the pieces of it together and asked me to teach a class called Herbal Medicine as a Subversive Act. And it truly is. And you know, I said that my green book, Healing Wise, talks about the three traditions of healing.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my three good ideas. Another one of my good ideas is the idea of drinking nourishing herbal infusions.
Yeah.
And this is something that I always want to share with people, and especially with your listeners.
Please.
Because your average American is spending at least $100 a month on supplements. And your health-conscious American is spending upwards of $300 a month on supplements. And study after study continues to confirm that taking supplements is a way to ruin your health. They're just not good for us, especially antioxidant supplements. Some of the bad news that's just been out recently is anyone who takes more than 300 milligrams of ascorbic acid on a daily basis doubles the risk of adult-onset diabetes.
And this is vitamin C that people take 10,000 a day in sometimes.
In some circumstances, or most people who are taking it are taking 1,000 milligrams a day.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I mean, I know some
and
people that really loaded up. Like, who was the guy of
Linus Pauling.
Linus Pauling, who was an advocate of that, yeah.
But,
and he
was
a smart guy, but I don't know about that.
When we look at his papers, what we see is that he basically understood the placebo effect. And knew that as a public figure, he could engage the placebo effect and get people to heal themselves by using an inert substance.
Uh-huh.
And his mistake was that he thought that ascorbic acid was inert.
Yeah, like anything's inert, right?
Well, you know, he just didn't realize. And, of course, this is one of the reasons why no one has been able to replicate his studies. is because he was using it as a placebo. He was using what I call mind medicine,
right,
which is an extremely powerful medicine.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's the placebo effect is something that science just runs away from. They want no part of it because, they have no way to explain it. Yeah,
no,
people talk
it's not
about
that
it
they run away from it. I mean, that's why they do double-blind studies, because they know that the placebo effect is always going to be confounding other studies.
Right, but ask him to explain it.
Oh, well, I mean, hey, even you and I couldn't necessarily explain what's going on in the computer.
No, I mean...
I used to do every single bit of work on my own car. You know, I ground the heads, replace the distributor, I re-get my spark plugs. I don't even open the hood anymore.
Right.
It makes no sense to me under there.
Mm.
So, it's nice in that way to have things around us. So instead of spending that money on supplements, which don't do our health any good, what I suggest people do is drink nourishing herbal infusions. And I talk about nourishing herbal infusions in all of my books. Wise Winner for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health, The Wise Woman Way, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and of course Healing Wise, the big green herbal for everybody. To make a nourishing herbal infusion, you take 1 ounce by weight of dried herb, and that would be an herb like stinging nettle, or oat straw, or red clover, or comfrey leaf. And you put that 1 ounce of herb into a quart jar, a canning jar if you have it.
Mm-hmm.
And for those in the metric system, that's a liter jar and 30 grams of herb. And then you pour boiling water over it, filling the jar to the top, stirring it so that the herb gets wetted, putting a little more boiling water in, putting a tight lid on it, and letting it steep like that for a minimum of 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Which allows all of the minerals and vitamins and good plant constituents to be extracted.
Right.
And then you strain it and refrigerate it. And you can drink anywhere from half to all of that quart of infusion over a day.
Mm-hmm.
A quart of nettle infusion contains about 1,000 milligrams of calcium and about 5 calories.
Mm-hmm.
It's an exceptional source of vitamin A activity, with over 25,000 international unit equivalents of vitamin A activity in a quart.
Mm-hmm.
It's a superb source of all of the B vitamins, especially folic acid. Stinging nettle restores the health of the kidneys and the adrenals, restoring powerful and enduring energy. It brightens up the eyes and the skin, and that makes the hair and the blood vessels stronger and healthier.
Mm-hmm.
And not with the tincture, not with pills and capsules.
Mm-hmm.
We need to use a significant amount of the herb. 1 ounce is the equivalent of 4 ounces or a quarter pound of fresh herb.
Right.
If you said to me, Susan, I've decided to really improve my diet by eating carrots, and I'm going to eat half a teaspoon of carrots once a week from now on, I'd have to laugh, wouldn't I?
Right.
Because half a teaspoon of carrots, which is 5 times more than is in any herbal capsule,
yeah,
isn't going to make any difference.
Right. All right, look, you mentioned all of these different types of plants. So from a practical viewpoint, a person has to first identify what's going on around him or her.
Yes.
So maybe you could talk a little bit...
No, you go to the store and buy them.
Well, what about the stuff that's growing out in your yard?
First, you go to the store and buy them.
Okay, so in other words, this is
the
first step.
You go and you buy from your local store, mm-hmm, stinging nettle, right? And maybe at first you get an ounce or two of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you start, you know, drinking these nourishing herbal infusions. Oh, maybe you buy an ounce or two of oat straw.
Mm-hmm.
Oat straw strengthens the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
It really helps us through times of stress. If we're feeling anxious, oat straw is a tremendous ally. If we're going through a lot of change or a lot of grief in our life, oat straw is a wonderful ally. Now, I must confess that oat straw is considered a male sexual tonic.
Mm-hmm.
And it does unbind bound testosterone. And so men, especially men after the age of 40, feel a real pickup from drinking oat straw infusion, and women after the age of 50 often do as well. So you can buy, you know, these dried herbs already at your local health food store. And you'll buy them, you know, an ounce at a time. If you want to buy 2 ounces, just weigh it out in separate bags. And I want you to put the whole ounce into that quart jar. It's going to seem like a lot, but go ahead and do it and fill the jar with boiling water. Let it steep, strain it, refrigerate it, drink it hot or cold, any way you want it. Belinda wanted Larry to drink some oat straw because, you know, they were not having such a thrilling time in bed. And Larry was resistant. So Belinda heated up the oat straw and put instant coffee in it and served it to him that way.
There you go.
You know, any way you want to. When I'm in Texas, I say, if you need a shot of Jack Daniels in it, go for it.
Mm.
Whatever it takes to drink your nourishing herbal infusion.
All right.
Then what will happen is many different things. First of all, because your body is finally getting high levels of minerals, and minerals that are the opposite valence from the blood.
Hmm.
So what does that mean?
You tell us.
That means that the blood has one charge, and the minerals in these infusions have the opposite charge.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when we bring opposite poles of a magnet together?
They snap together.
They snap together, right? And the minerals in pills have the same valence. So if we bring the same ends of magnets together, they repel each other.
Mm-hmm. They just excrete it out into the environment for the most part.
Exactly. Which is why in a 6.5-year study of 6,000 women over 55 in Australia, they found that women who took calcium supplements were twice as likely to break a bone.
Amazing.
So by drinking our nourishing herbal infusions like nettle or oat straw or red clover, you know, red clover is the world's leading anti-cancer and cancer preventative herb. It's grown for pregnant and lactating cows, and it's so safe that virtually anyone could drink red clover.
And the steps you can buy?
You can buy this at your local health food store.
Local health food store.
Yeah.
And you buy the leaves, the actual...
You buy the red clover flowers, mm-hmm. or the oat straw, which is the straw of the oats,
mm-hmm.
right? Or you buy the stinging nettle. It's called stalk and leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I said, you'll buy an ounce, and so you'll have be able to just empty that into your quart jar.
Right.
And the red clover, of course, is very bulky, and again, it's going to seem to be a lot in the jar, but that's what you need. You really need a lot of it to get the benefit. If you were to buy an ounce of dried herb, but buy it a pound at a time, wholesale, to get all the vitamins and all the minerals, plus improve the protein in your diet by 100%, by drinking these nourishing herbal infusions, will cost you less than $30 a month.
Hmm.
Now, of course, going to your local store and buying it ounce by ounce, it's going to be almost as much as buying vitamin and mineral pills, but it's going to be doing a lot better for you.
Right, it's actually doing something good for
you. Exactly. And then, meanwhile, you can, you know, go to my website, SusanWeed.com, and actually, my daughter is so clever that she bought both spellings of Susan.
Ah, did she really?
So if you keep the sun in Susan and go to SusanWeed, that's great. But if you it make me Susan San, that's okay,
there
too.
There it is, yeah.
Right? It's, yep, it's an honorific. Right, Susan.
Yeah.
And you know, all of that will take you to my website where there's a special section about nourishing herbal infusions and links to places that sell these herbs. I do not get any kickback on this.
All right,
that sell the herbs in bulk and at very reasonable prices.
Yeah, and
so that you can make these on a daily basis. Now, I have to admit that red clover is also the world's leading fertility herb.
Mm.
So if you and your beloved drink oat straw one day and red clover the next day, do not blame me for the consequences.
Right.
You've been warned, okay?
Yeah, that's great. All right, now, the website is great, and there's a tremendous amount of information. So people do take a look over there, and don't spend all your time tonight while you're listening to us, but bookmark it and go back there, because Susan has workshops, and there's a spiritual side of this whole thing that I want to talk about in a little while, and all kinds
of... And correspondence courses.
Yes, of course, correspondence and herbal medicine stuff, women's apprenticeships, and all kinds of different things. What's the Green Goddess Week? just because I see that
right
now, it sparks
me. Week is my shortest apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 1 week super intensive apprenticeship, and I mean super intensive.
And you do it up
the women. The women are working from 8 in the morning until about midnight.
And do you do this up at your place in the Catskills?
I do it up at my place in the Catskills.
So everyone comes up there for the courses?
Well, I also travel.
For some of them. Okay, okay.
Exactly. So I will be at the International Herbal Symposium in Wheaton, Massachusetts this year.
All right.
I'll be at the Women's Herbal Conference in New Hampshire, the Northeast Women's Herbal Conference. I'll be at the Pacific Northwest Herbal Conference out in Oregon in the late summer. I'll be doing the Green Hermetics Conference at the Sufi Center here in upstate New York later on this early summertime. And again, as you said, at my website, it's a whole schedule of all of the different places that I will be this year and different ways for people to interact with me. I'll end up my year in early December out in California out in Orange County doing some things out there.
All right, so the Green Goddess Week, that was a super intense week where you guys really work hard all day. And
guys.
Because
we're not guys.
Mm. You girls.
Yeah, us Gaias.
You Gaias.
Us Gaias. Goddesses of the earth, eh?
Yes, that's for sure.
Yeah. Actually, I've been telling people for over 10 years that guy is a weird and distorted male, and if we keep calling each other guy, we're going to wind up with a guy for president.
I think we're too
Could
late.
Could we stop now, please?
I will. I will do my, best.
And not just you, but all of us.
Yes, I agree with you. I mean, words are important, and language really actually, we've been naive about how important our language really is. So.
Yeah. So, these nourishing herbal infusions, comfrey leaf is one of my favorite nourishing herbal infusions.
Mm-hmm.
And many people say to me, oh my goodness, well, is comfrey safe? And I say to them, well, it's only anecdotal evidence, but here I stand, and I have drunk a minimum of a quart of comfrey leaf infusion a week for 25 years.
Mm.
In many weeks, if I've had need, I've drunk far more than that, I said. And here I stand, in complete health, with nothing wrong with my liver at all. So comfrey is the herb of flexibility. I often say that comfrey only affects the respiratory system, the digestive system, the ligaments, the tendons, the bones, the skin, and the hair, and the fascia or connective tissue, as it's in that comfrey does very little.
Mm.
But of course, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Comfrey also contains special proteins that are used to make short-term memory cells.
What's that you say?
Indeed.
I'm just kidding.
As one of my friends says, I don't have Alzheimer's, but I sure have half Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I can remember, the numbers off of invoices from 12 years ago, but I can't find my glasses, you know.
Exactly. So comfrey helps you find your glasses, what can I say?
There you go. I'm going to have to go find me some and make me a nice infusion.
Yes, comfrey leaf. Very important to use the comfrey leaf. If any of the infusions taste too strong to you, and the nettle tastes very green. It tastes like if you've ever cooked like kale or spinach and then drunk the water.
Uh-huh.
That's what the nettle infusion tastes like. Some people like it with like some miso in it because it's so rich and green.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the red clover, that tastes like black tea.
Hmm.
So people who really like a cup of tea usually really like the red clover. The oat straw, what can I say? It's kind of sweet and mellow like oatmeal is. Which, of course, it's the straw of the plant that gives us oats for oatmeal. It's just a very tender and loving herb. And the comfrey is kind of a rich, strong, robust brew that's very good, heated up with some honey in it.
Huh.
But it's kind of funny on the tongue because it's both slippery and drying. And so, with the comfrey, for sure, I always put a little pinch of whatever the favorite mint is. And that could be like peppermint or spearmint, or it could be lemon balm or lavender or rosemary or thyme, and literally just a little pinch.
Mm-hmm.
We like bergamot, the Monarda didyma, in with our comfrey. Just the tiniest hint. And you could put a little bit of mint in with any of your infusions when you brew them, just to change the taste slightly to make it more aromatic or more appealing to you.
Mm-hmm.
In the wise woman tradition, as opposed to the heroic heroic tradition, we don't say no pain, no gain. We say no pleasure, no treasure.
Wonderful. Another language distinction.
Just, well, a way of guiding ourselves, that we are not at war with our bodies. We are not fearful of the messages from our bodies. We do not need to guard against our bodies. Our bodies are our allies. Our bodies contain a wisdom, and our bodies will tell us if we take the time to be still, to enter the silence, and to listen, to turn off the email and the TV and the music, and just listen. Speaking of music, I just made a CD.
Really?
Another friend put me up to it. My friends are always putting me up to outrageous things.
Good thing.
And I usually jump up to their challenges,
uh-huh,
you know?
Uh-huh.
My dear friend Marie, who's been such a helper for me.
What's the music?
Over the Marie Summerwood, over the life of the Wise Women Center, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year.
Congratulations.
25 years of providing a safe space for women and a place for the teachings of the Wise Woman Way, which nourished the wholeness of the unique individual. And so Marie Summerwood, as I said, my dear helper, who has found her path through creating chants and recording them, especially on her CD, She Walks with Snakes, said to me, you need to make a CD of the chants that we sing at the Wise Woman Center.
And what's it, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we have done it. You know, I invited my friend Lisa T.L.
Uh-huh.
to fly in from California. She has, oh goodness, 5 or 6 CDs to her credit, including Songs of the Goddess. And, again, through my website, you can link to Lisa T.L. And she has written a song which is virtually the anthem of herbalists in America. The spirit of the plant says, come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman. And so we sang that on the CD. And we sang my goat song, right? I went out one day with my goats to play, singing goaty, 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 goat. Had our grace song that we sing before meals, several of the chants that Marie Summerwood has done. Dance in a circle of women, make your web of my life. And we had a chorus of 8 women singing, wonderful backup from a jazz pianist, an herbalist who's a jazz pianist, and a wonderful drummer. I went in and I said to him, you know, we're into the goddess and nature and everything. And he kind of listened to me for a while, and he said, did anybody tell you that I played with Lynn Redmond for 10 years? I said, oh, I guess I don't need to tell you anything at all. You know about this. And a wonderful flute and harp playing from my dear friend Julia Haynes. It's just a truly thrilling thing. You can find out more about it, again, at my website. And we're at the final stages of editing, and we're hoping to have this out for you within a month.
All right, wonderful.
Yeah.
All right, and that's cool. That's great. I love the fact that you're doing things in all these different, you know, these different arenas.
Yeah, and hard at work on a new book, mm-hmm. which I'm calling Down There, The Wise Woman Way.
All right.
And as someone quipped, it doesn't sound like a book about Australia.
All right, hey, before we take a break, I have a question here. A person writes, spring almost over, ? We got snow again today. I built a fort yesterday with my kids. Something's going on with the weather or not? What's your opinion on, you know, the whole idea of climate change and all this stuff? And I'm not looking for a definition or an explanation, but do you think something is going on?
Well, spring starts with Groundhog Day at February 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever made maple syrup?
Not personally, but I know how it's done.
No. So when do we collect maple sap?
In March, right?
In February.
Late February?
Yes.
Okay.
Because that's when the sap starts flowing.
Mm-hmm.
So when the sap rises is the beginning of spring. And that sap rises and falls. spring is not defined by temperature or weather.
Mm.
It's defined by the cycles of life.
Yeah.
And you earlier in the show just said, oh my goodness, the snow was so out of place because the sap had already risen and the trees had already blossomed.
Mm.
Because they are responding to that deep inner wisdom. Well, that happens sometimes, that a late frost comes. And, there's no fruit that year.
It's just the way it goes.
It is just the way it goes, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of a cruel trick in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the trees do manage to survive it. So, certainly we look outside and we can very clearly see, you know, that the trees, as you say, the trees are budding, the trees are flowering, the trees are leafing. Right? When the trees have leaves, summer has begun.
Mm-hmm.
And if it snows on them, well, certainly that's strange.
Right.
But it doesn't make it winter.
Right.
Right.
All right, Susan, that's a good place to take a little break here, okay?
Okay.
All right, everybody, we're at the bottom of the hour here. It's about 12:30 in the a.m. now on the 17th of... what the hell is it? The 17th of April, 2007. Our guest is Susan Weed. You can find information and all kinds of other things about Susan and the wonderful people that she works and plays with on her website at www.susanweed.com, Susan Weed, or you can spell it S-U-S-A-N if you like. But either way, you can link there from my site from here on out at MikeHagan.com, and you can listen to the show from the archives, probably sometime tomorrow afternoon, and download it and share it with anybody else who you think might enjoy it. And thanks, everyone, for listening and for sticking around. Thanks to KOPN for making it happen. And thanks to Susan for sharing her time with us tonight, late into the night now, in upstate New York. And we'll talk to Susan a little bit more about what's happening up there. They got some wild weather that she's been in the middle of for the last, 24 hours or so at least, okay? All right, this one is called You Love Me. And it's Devochka from How It Ends is the name of the CD. One more time, Devochka on the web at www.devochka.net. That's called You Love Me. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. Devochka, great music. Independent music from Colorado. And I love it. Okay, we have Susan Weed on with us as well tonight from her place up in the Catskills up there in northern New York State. And Susan, thanks for sticking around with us.
You're welcome, but not for very much longer, maybe for 5 minutes or so.
No problem, that's fine.
Okay, good.
All right.
Do we have a last question or some important thing? I just went and got some nettle infusion, it's the herb we're drinking today.
Well, I think maybe one of the things that seems to be coming through from people, there are two things. Codex Alimentarius, this idea that the pharmaceutical fiends are going to try to make everything illegal, essentially, that we would need a prescription to get anything herbal, including fruit juice. People are concerned about that. Maybe you can make a comment about that. And then I'd also, there's one other question that seems to keep coming up about what to do in your own yard, how to sort of take steps to recognize the allies in your own world.
Well, as we said, by using the weeds in your own backyard, you strike a blow at the empire, and you don't have to worry about any man's laws.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways I learned this was when I was working in the health food industry, and I was staffing behind a counter in a local health food store, and this new herb came on the scene, Tong Quai, and it was supposed to be for any problem that any woman had. And I sold it liberally to the women of Woodstock. And then, about a year and a half later, the FDA decided that Dong Quai couldn't be imported. And there was a period of time when you couldn't get any Dong Quai. And the women were really upset because I had recommended it to them. They'd been taking it and getting good results with it, and suddenly they couldn't get it. And I realized that I had walked this all out under the end of a branch, and that branch had been sawn off. And I decided to go back to the roots.
Mm-hmm.
And the roots are the plants that go around us. And so wherever I am, I'm teaching people about the plants that grow around them. And, of course, the great thing about the weeds is throughout almost all of the world, those weeds that I'm talking about, including, plantain and lamb's quarters, amaranth. I have a book of weeds of Australia. They're exactly the weeds I have in the Catskills.
Nice.
I was down in Costa Rica. I saw many of the same weeds in the cultivated areas there. Right, amaranth greens, which is Callaloo, is famous in Jamaica. So purslane is all over. So the plants that we talked about before. So I think that, the answer to the two questions is the same. Love your weeds, right? Make space for your weeds. And I also, of course, will and have and do take strong action to prevent the licensing of herbs or herbalists. I teach in Germany where herbs are legalized, and that does mean you have to have a prescription. And people often say to me, how on earth could you be teaching in Germany? I mean, they have such a long tradition of herbal medicine, and you're, you know, like this upstart American herbalist. They say, well, yes, but they gave it away by allowing it to be legalized.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a treasure in the United States that we can use herbs without government regulation. Now, that also means that we have to be careful. And let me give you just a few hints on that. One, never buy any herb in a capsule or a pill. That is the way to really injure yourself. Two, when you use an herb, use only one herb. Do not buy or use combination tinctures.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And three, use things that are as local as possible. You don't necessarily have to find them, grow them, or have them where you live. Many people listening will be living in cities.
Right.
But you can learn what is around you, and you can buy that preferentially over what is rare and far away.
Mm-hmm. All right.
If you do own some land, one thing you can do is set aside a small part of that, as I do, for the fairies. And don't go into that area at all. Really leave it for them. Meanwhile, in your garden areas, let some weeds grow. See what they are. See how you can interplant with weeds. Some weeds are catch crops, which catches the insects for you. Some weeds provide valuable nutrients to the soil. Many weeds are annuals and don't actually compete with the plants you're growing if you make sure that you treat the weeds like plants.
Mm-hmm.
If you treat them like weeds, they can act like weeds. Right? I had one lamb's quarter plant that we pinched back so many times it was 6 feet across.
Just said, forget it, all right? I'll show you, huh?
Right? Well, it's like pinching basil, right?
Oh,
basil's
yeah.
an annual. If you just plant basil seeds and let them grow up, they're just going to flower and go to seed.
Uh-huh.
So you keep pinching, and they get bushy.
Right.
And the same thing with your lamb's quarter. We go out, you know, we thin the lamb's quarter just like we thin our carrots.
Uh-huh.
Right, so that we only leave, you know, model plants spaced evenly, and then we pinch those back. And we get a tremendous harvest of good quality greens from it, as well as the ones we let go out to seed. And, of course, the lamb's quarter is Chenopodium album in my garden, and the one that's grown commercially is Chenopodium quinoa.
Huh.
So the lamb's quarter in your garden, seed of that, is the wild variety of the grain quinoa.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's an amazing world. I could stay and talk to you all night, except I'm getting ready to go to sleep here because I've got a busy day tomorrow.
Right.
The apprentices are doing plant family reports. We're going to be out with the baby goats. I am having my time with my dear friend Robin Free, who has multiple sclerosis tomorrow, and then I'll be doing 2 hours of telephone consultations as well as recording a radio show for Ladybug Live. And on Thursday, I'll be recording my radio show for HealthyLife.net. So lots of places
wow.
to catch me on the net and around and about. And I wish you and yours green blessings.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Susan. We really appreciate it. And you enjoy yourself, and we'll stay in touch, okay?
All right.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Everybody, Susan Weed on the web, www.susunweed.com. And you can link there from my site at MikeHagan.com from here on out, okay? All right, let's take another break here. We'll play another piece of music here, and I'll get my act together. We'll decide what we're going to do for this last hour. And come on back in just a few minutes, okay? This one is called, appropriately enough, We're Leaving. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, Devochka. And thanks again to Susan Weed.
Glasses, please. Let's drink them all.
Vochka from How It Ends. That's called Relieving. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, about 11 minutes before 1 a.m. now on the 17th of April, 2007. And pleasure to be with y'all. Hello to everyone listening to us this evening. Big thank you to Susan Weed. We'll get that interview up in the archives in just a short time here. Anyway, if you're listening on KOPN or over the internet, live or otherwise, regardless, every Monday we broadcast a show here from KOPN in downtown Columbia, Missouri. And we stream the show as well on the web, kopn.org. Just click on the Listen Live button if you want to do it through the website. And there's a wonderful 64K stream that you can hear 24 hours a day. I also want to thank the people over at Cosmic Waves Radio, cosmicwavesradio.com. They also send the stream out every Monday night. And I appreciate the work that everyone's doing at both those places, all right? Okay, also, Larry, the web wizard. Hope to have him back with us soon. Larry actually moved back to Hawaii, and I congratulate him and his wonderful wife. They're back on the islands, and he did it. He's been trying to get back there for a long, long time, and, well, he made it back on Saturday, and he's getting things settled and We'll have Larry back with us real soon, I hope. All right? Okay, let's see. What else is happening here? Lots of great music. The poetry, Poets Corner. I've got some new stuff I need to post up there, and I apologize for Bob. I've been meaning to read a wonderful spring poem that that he wrote, and I need to get it up in the Poets Corner. I'll do that. I'm not sure when I'm going to be able to read it. I want to find a good piece of music to read it over, and I didn't prepare for that tonight. But regardless, there's wonderful stuff coming in. I appreciate it. Send it to us, and we'll find a place for it on the website and share it with other people, okay? All right, if you'd like, you can check it out and let me know what you think. Go over to Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com, and let me know what you think, okay? You'll have access to everything we're doing. Take a look, see, and share your thoughts with me, okay? There's a forum, bulletin board, where lots of people share ideas and stories and thoughts and jokes and whatever. And more than I can ever keep up with these days, but great, interesting stuff being discussed usually over there. There's a live chat room that's up and active tonight and always. You can use the chat room anytime you like. And I'll zip over there in just a second and see what anybody has to say there. I encourage my guests as well as listeners, you know, to join us in the chat room and on the forum and spend time sharing ideas and stuff during the week outside of just the Monday night frame, you know. Anyway, if you want to get a hold of me directly, my email address is orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, orbitradio@AOL.com. You can send me email. And I also encourage you to send mail to guests and musicians who are on the program if you like their stuff or if you don't. They appreciate it, trust me. All right, tonight if you send a note to Susan, I'm sure she'd appreciate it. All right, phone number here in the studio, 573-443-8255. Maybe after the top of the hour, we'll open the phone lines up or something. I don't know. If you want to call in, though, 573-443-8255. I guess we'll just watch the line after. I'll sort of open it up here in a little while, and if people call, we'll talk. If not, we'll come up with something else, okay? All right, tonight, Susan Weed, wonderful. Thank you. Next week, Bruce Raphael. Bruce Raphael, all right, he's written a couple of books, but I don't know him because of his books. I know him because of Kent. He's a friend of Kent Stedman's, and he's an interesting guy who researches a lot of different and mysterious, unknown sort of mysterious ideas, and his most recent investigation has been China and some of the ancient historical architecture in China. You know, there's a tremendous amount of ancient stuff there that is sort of off the radar to a lot of people, but pyramids and, you know, thousands of year old complexes with extraordinary and beautiful artwork and architecture that to this day, you know, any engineer worth their salt will, you know, look at you and say, I have no idea how these people did this stuff. It's just remarkable. But anyway, Bruce Raphael has been there for a year and a half or 2 years, and he's been literally walking around these places and investigating hands-on. And, I mean, it's Indiana Jones-type stuff. So we'll have Bruce on the program next week, and hopefully we can get the line hooked up and everything from Beijing, which is where he is right now. Pardon me, let me get a wet whistle here. All right, there you go. Anyway, it should be interesting. Bruce Raphael, we'll talk about ancient Chinese secrets. All right, next week on the 23rd of April. The 30th, Richard Allen Miller. Remarkable guy, that's all I can say. Go Google Richard Allen Miller. He's into everything. And it should be an interesting show. He's a guy we'll probably want to have back because he's so knowledgeable in a lot of different subjects. We're going to sort of narrow the range next week and talk about just a certain number of topics, and then we'll probably have him back on to talk about some other things in the future. But he's great, and I'm really looking forward to having Richard Allen Miller on the program. Pardon me, on the 30th of April. Still working on Paul Stamets, B. Wilson. Speaking of honeybees, there's a wonderful author. His name is B. Wilson. She wrote a book called The Hive that I have, and she knows a lot about bees. So we'll talk to her about that in the next couple months, hopefully. I don't have that one actually sort of locked in, but we'll talk to B. Wilson hopefully sometime soon. Patrick Flanagan, still got to get a date for that. Paul Laffoley, the amazing artist and architect, Paul Laffoley, back on the 21st of May. Gary David, Orion and the Hopi, interesting book. Dr. Richard Tarnas, still got to work things out with Dr. Tarnas. John Major Jenkins back on the show soon. Jeff Stray, hopefully. I'm working on trying to get in touch with Barbara Ehrenreich, someone who I've really appreciated for a long time, but have yet to have any luck getting in touch with her. But anyway, we'll see what we can do, okay? Lots of good music to share with you over the next few weeks as well. If you've got good music, you want to share it with me, send it to me. And if, you know, it works, we'll play it. Okay, what else? Well, announcements. KOPN, there's a big show. The big show coming up on the 4th of May, Friday night. Rutherford, Big Medicine, Caulfield and the Magic, In Thicket, Bachman, and maybe another band, I'm not sure, but those five alone are well worth seeing. And it's a benefit for KOPN down at the Blue Fugue, down at 120 South 9th Street, I think it is, just down there across from the 9th Street bookstore, or what used to be the 9th Street bookstore. That's a shame to see them go. Anyway, great show that we got lined up for you, and also a great way to support community radio. So come on down on the 4th of May, down to the Blue Fugue, see some great rock and roll. It'll cost $5 to get in, and the cover charge there, that $5, will go to support KOPN. And we'd sure appreciate it if you come down. And I'll be down there, and I'd love to, you know, say hello, okay? And I apologize, I have a little bit of a cold sort of rotating around my house again right now. But I'll do my best to fight off the little tickle in my throat. All right, what else is happening? Space weather. I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a break here. We'll play another piece of music. We'll come back, do space weather, and talk about some of the things in the news. I don't know, whatever else you guys want to talk about, okay? All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. You can find us on the web at kopn.org. You can find me on the web at www.mikehagan.com. This is One Last Vow, Devochka, from Una Volta.
What's your favorite kind of music? Jazz, folk, classical? If you pledge to KOPN online at kopn.org, you'll automatically be entered into a drawing to win a trip for two to take in one of three music festivals this summer. The sweepstakes is called Public Radio Takes You Places, and the winner of the drawing will win a trip and deluxe accommodations to your choice of one of three great American music festivals: Newport for folk music, Santa Fe for opera, Monterey for jazz. Where will you choose to go? All the details are online at kopn.org, and while you're there, make a pledge to support KOPN. Choosing Help Keep It Quiet on KOPN is easy. Picking your destination will be hard. Help Keep It Quiet today, only on your listener-supported community radio station, 89.5 FM, KOPN Columbia, and streaming on the web at kopn.org.
All right, everybody. Hi, it's Mike, and back at you here. Listen to KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, and this program is called Radio Orbit. It's about 4 minutes after 1 now in the morning on Monday morning, 17th of April, 2007. Good to be with you all here. And let's see. Susan Weed, thank you. We had Susan Weed with us for a good hour and 45 minutes or so. If you missed that, it'll be up on the web in the next day or two. But she's wonderful, and you can check her out on the web at Susan Weed, SusanWeed.com. And also, we've been listening to the music of Devochka, D-E-V-O-T-C-H-K-A, Devochka, all night. We'll hear a few more from them as we close out the program here, okay? All right, it is time to do space weather real quickly here, okay? Let's do that. There's a big old asteroid, by the way, that just got identified very recently, actually. And it's flying past the Earth right now. It's 2 million kilometers away. That's not that far. And it's big. You can see it with a telescope. 300 meters wide. Wow. And it's pretty bright. Whatever it's made out of, it's glowing pretty brightly right now. And if you've got a backyard telescope, you can go take a look. Go over to spaceweather.com and it'll tell you how to do that, okay? Also, there's this comet that Kent and I were talking about a little bit last week, Comet Encke, you know, and you can actually see it, naked eye, right now, shining like a fourth magnitude star in the western sky at sunset, and sort of like a fuzzy greenish looking thing. If you want to go outside and see it, find Venus. This is around sunset, okay? And trace a line from Venus to where the sun went down. And you'll find Encke about halfway along that line. And the best way, of course, is to look at it with a telescope or with some binoculars. But anyway, Encke is moving toward the sun. And pretty soon we won't be able to see it because of the brightness of the sun will sort of overtake its own brightness. So take a look while you can, all right? Now, there's also some big old prominences dancing around on the surface of the sun. There's a pretty big coronal hole that showed up on the SOHO satellites in the last 24 hours or so. And no sunspots, though. Very weird. Definitely, you know, if you were talking about solar minimum, the last couple of weeks have been about as minimum as you can get. But at any rate, still, the sun's alive, you know. The more I look at it, it's just alive. So anyway, potentially hazardous asteroids, what else? Oh, they got a list of a few of them here that are supposed to be zipping by pretty soon. Obviously, though, the ones that are the interesting ones are the ones they don't know about. This one that they just discovered, 2007HA, which is going by the Earth right now, tonight. By the way, I got a beer. It's making my throat feel better. Non-alcoholic beer. What do they call it, stuff? Sharp. It's sharp. Sharps. Comet Encke up there. And this asteroid 2007. You can see both of them in the sky tonight, all right? Go over to Kent's website as well. He's got all kinds of great stuff up there right now, including this China investigation that Bruce Raphael is in the middle of, and we're going to speak with him from Beijing next week, okay? Let's see. That's about it for space weather. Let me go over to the chat room and say hi real fast. See if anybody has anything to say. Marvel's reading Velikovsky. Great. Amazing. Somebody else reading a book called Red Sky at Dawn. I'm not sure what that is about. Yeah, find the others. For sure, you guys. Good to find you here. All right. What we could do is this. I've got... Well, there are two things. This Patriots Day thing, how about it? This shooting that happened, where was it, Virginia Tech? I don't usually talk about current events, but man. Oh, boy. Another crazed person, for whatever reason, just killed a whole bunch of people and hurt a whole bunch of other people. And the wherefores and why are yet to be ironed out. I'm sure that, the truth is hard to find these days, but at any rate, something very strange happened there. And today is, is this mid-April, April 20th, April 15th, April 20th, it's always a sketchy time, it seems like. It's always people doing wacky stuff. I was living in Colorado when that whole Columbine thing went down. That was on the 20th of April. And this one today, what, the 16th? Well, yesterday, I guess, now. What's going on? People just broken. It's just broken people. I don't think, again, this is my take. I'm not sure that, a conspiracy is really required for this thing. There's just so many broken people out there. There's so many broken people. They're just people that are just in deep trouble. So today's Patriots Day. Most people don't even know what it is. It's like, I figured it had something to do with the Bush administration and the Patriot Act. But it's actually another one of these days to commemorate war. Most of our holidays commemorate wars of some sort. That's why the calendar is so important. That's why the work that Dr. Arguelles, that Jose Arguelles is doing is important. The ideas of calendar reform. Because, the reality of the culture, the perception of the culture, is literally, built out of the calendar, the way you, schedule your life. And if you look at the holidays that we celebrate, you'll find they're primarily Christian traditional holidays, and then war holidays, with a few bones thrown in for like labor or something like that, But at any rate, this one today, Patriots Day, was to commemorate the war for independence. The Revolutionary War of America. And tax day is tomorrow. Who knows if that plays into the whole thing. But anyway, this guy, I guess, one guy, was it two guys? I don't even know. All I know is it's a nasty situation. And I'm sure it'll just be, just all over the news now for a while, and they'll sensationalize the heck out of it. And really, we'll have a hard time getting to the bottom of it, though, I imagine, because they never seem to. And it's interesting that this happened today, because I always wonder about, the people that do it or do things like this, do anything really, but what's going on in their head, their own psychology, right? Who were they? What? I want to know more about the person themselves, and their background, their childhood. Do they have a shrink? Do they have a shrink? How often does somebody say, hey, did that guy have a psychiatrist? Currently, a therapist, a psychiatrist, a psychologist. I mean, that's a big one, I think, that doesn't get looked at very often, because there is a percentage of those people that use their profession for, less than altruistic purposes. As a matter of fact, there was a story that just came out in the news a couple of days ago from California. This was an AP story Here's the headline. Famous child psychiatrist accused of molesting patients. A child psychiatrist who once headed the... Listen to this, all right? A child psychiatrist who once headed the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry was arrested amid allegations he molested male patients dating back to the 1960s. Dr. William Ayers, you should remember that name, by the way, 75 years old now, appeared in court Friday on charges that he molested three patients. I'm sure that's a conservative estimate. No plea was entered because his lawyer was not at the hearing. Ayers was taken into custody Thursday at his San Mateo home and charged with 14 felony counts. La, la, la. Prosecutors said they plan to present evidence that he molested young boys in his care for decades. Anyway, this is a, you know, and the guy's not been convicted. So if he's innocent, you know, let him walk free. But if he's not, you know, let him, if nothing else, be shown for what he is. Okay? Because, you know, there are people who are more vulnerable than others. And there are children, you know, who are vulnerable. All children are vulnerable. Some way more so than others. And when you're in a position of, you know, power, first of all, where, you know, where you can be alone with a child and you've been given the privilege and the trust to be alone with a child, you know, and you break that trust, you know, you better be ready to pay the price. Because it's getting more and more transparent, your actions, people that do these sort of things. And obviously, you know, here's a guy that was the head of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, you know. So this guy in Virginia Tech, you know, what's his background like? What's his childhood like, you know? What's his deal? You'll find out probably. He's probably just a broken person. Been through the hell of, you know, Western capitalist, materialist, existentialist culture. Snapped. Another snapper. And then, of course, you'll get every different agenda on the planet now will grab this thing and try to use it to push forward their own particular agenda. Whether it was part of somebody's or not, who's to say? I don't know. Everything's so muddy these days, nobody knows what the hell is going on. Everyone's lying. People, when you hear the truth now, you better be able to discern in your own heart. That's the only way to tell the truth. It's either that or through your own experience. You know, if you didn't actually witness it, see it, feel it, taste it, touch it, you know, hear it with your own ears, then everything else is pretty much unconfirmed rumor. You know, propaganda, probably lies. So, you know, you're better off with you know, keeping things straight and understanding things and paying attention in your own space, your own place, where you can actually have an impact and you can actually see and feel what's actually going on. Because, gosh, outside of that, it's very difficult these days to say what's happening. But, you know, to be frank, psychiatrists and psychologists have always been perpetrators of this sort of thing. And not all of them, certainly. And I know there are people that are doing great work, as always. But anytime you have, you know, a field of work where you can be trusted alone with vulnerable people, you know, there are some people that gravitate towards those positions because they want to take advantage of people. It's just the way it is. And to say that that's not something that's going on all over the place, you know, that's the thing. Is that people that, these aren't isolated. The thing is, nobody wants to look. If we really had journalists that were, you know, interested in this sort of stuff, pedophile gangs and, you know, child sex rings and all this stuff, it exists. And it's not as far away as you think, people. It's just nobody wants to look. Well, you know, things don't stay hidden forever. And, you know, people better be ready for things to get really strange because a lot of stuff is going to come out of the woodwork. And, you know, it needs to. That's what moving forward is all about. You know, dealing with what's really happening in your own life and in the world around you. You know. So, all right. What else is happening here? I should do a little talk sometime about psychiatry and about the use of psychedelics. and about what a disaster this has been, that these things have been taken off the table for medicinal use. You know, psilocybin, even LSD, although I'm not a fan of that. You know, but psilocybin, we had this amazing Hopkins report, you know, which came out last year. And no one in my town is talking about it. I haven't seen one article in any of the papers, nothing in the medical journals, nothing from any physicians, I don't think. I haven't heard a word, you know, psychiatrist or otherwise. One of these days I'll do the dirty work, all right, and I'll talk about the shamanic use of visionary plants and sort of my own involvement and experience with it, with shamanic techniques and some of the plants that are associated with the stuff. And, you know, it's a case of just deepening understanding over the course of a long, long time. And it's useful, and it continues to be useful because it just always raises the bar and continues to integrate itself more completely into my own life and the meaning of, you know, quote-unquote reality in general. Now's not the time for that. We'll do that another time when I can actually prepare some sort of comments about it. All right? Let's see. Go back to the forum here and see what other people are talking about in the news. Well, I want to thank Henrik Palmgren, by the way. Red Ice Radio. RedIceCreations.com. R-E-D-Ice Creations. RedIceCreations.com. Henrik does a radio program from Sweden twice a week. He and his brother run a great website. And they've got a whole bunch of different stuff over there, lots of great news stories, lots of great research, independent research, and news from all over the planet, lots of great interviews in his archives. And anyway, he was kind enough to share his radio time with me a week ago Sunday. And anyway, it was sort of uncharacteristic of me, the way I presented myself, but I enjoyed it, and Henrik enjoyed it, and, you know, it was what it was, and it was probably harder for me to listen to that than anybody else. But anyway, thanks to Henrik for letting me sort of share my views in a real candid manner, and I appreciate it. He's doing great work, and I'd love to have Henrik on the program here sometime and talk with him about the work he's doing over there at Red Ice and also his music. You know, we'll do that one of these days. We'll have Henrik on the program and we'll play his music too. He has a musical project that he calls Leek, L-E-E-Q. You can find information about that over at his website as well. But anyway, he's a talented musician and I've played some of his music, quite a bit of it actually, in the past. And maybe we'll do some more of that in the future and have Henrik on the program and talk a little bit about what's happening in his world and return the favor to him. Anyway, it was a pleasure, and thanks, Henrik, and we'll talk at you soon, okay? Onward and upward, as you say so well. Okay, everybody else, let's see, there was a dolphin story, this dolphin story in the news, and it had to do with dolphins that were guarding naval bases or something like that. And I know this isn't really a new story. This has been something that's been going on for 50 years, essentially. But it is one that just came out today. And the title of the story says, Navy Shows Off Its Terror-Fighting Dolphins. In a world of high-tech sensors and underwater robotics, COA, the bottlenose dolphin and others like her may still be the Navy's best line of defense against terrorists and scuba gear. They are better than anything we have ever made, said Mike Roth, head of the science for the Navy's Marine Mammal Program, which trains dolphins, they think, and sea lions to guard military installations. About 75 dolphins and 25 sea lions are housed at the Naval Base Point Loma in San Diego Harbor as part of a Navy program to teach them to detect terrorists and mines underwater. Now, this is just like the movie, like Day of the Dolphin. Remember, it was 30 or 40 years old, George C. Scott. Still trying to do the same business. But anyway, there's a whole long story about this. And I sent it to Dr. Heisen and to Starr out in Hawaii. and ask for their comments. I haven't got a reply yet. I did see, actually, I take that back. I haven't heard from Michael, but Star sent me a note and said they're actually meeting with the Navy in the next couple of weeks in Hawaii, and this is one of the things that they're going to be talking about. So the next time we have Star and Michael on the air, it should be interesting. They've had a couple of meetings with the Navy since the last time we've talked to them, and there's some pretty interesting stuff coming out of all this stuff. Whether it's effective and going to actually be something that happens in the real world, I sure hope so. I hope that their progress really does manifest itself, and we can end some of this crazy stuff that they're doing with the marine mammals, with the cetacea, and not only in trying to harness and train dolphins and this sort of thing, but just bombarding the entire ocean with low frequency active sonar, it's a dangerous place out there in the ocean. Let's just put it that way. These days, if you're a creature that lives in the ocean, it doesn't really matter what sort of a creature you are. There's a devastating environmental situation happening in the oceans, just like there is on the land, and everything is changing. Everything is changing. And people better be ready for change, man. People better be ready for change. Everyone thinks it's going to be the end. They're wishing for the end. It's not going to be the end. It's never the end. Well, maybe when the star explodes, right? But, I don't think the star is going to explode. I think we're going to have to get it worked out. So, you better get ready for change. Status quo is about, talk about things that are off the menu. The status quo, business as usual. As T used to say. Anyway, the terror fighting dolphins of the Navy, look out for them. Actually, if you catch up with one of them, I'm sure they'd probably just give you a ride and be nice to you. I remember Michael telling stories about the reason that the dolphins were never really used operationally in an aggressive manner was because they just wouldn't do it. They thought they trained them. They thought they trained them to go plant landmines and all this stuff. And in fact, not landmines, but plant mines on the bottom of ships and this sort of thing. And in practice, in the practice routines, the dolphins would do it. They take the thing and go put it up on the bottom of the boat. And they actually did send them off operationally a number of times, apparently. And when they actually sent them off with real explosives to actually go assassinate somebody for real, they just didn't do it. They knew the difference between the fake ones and the real ones. That's why they're guarding a naval base, is because they can't do anything. They won't do anything offensive. And, what they're doing here with the Navy is probably trying to be ambassadors of some sort. But who knows? I'd be interested to see what Michael has to say about it. So, anyway, that's that. What else is happening here in the news? Actually, let's take a break. It's bottom of the hour here. I need to go blow my nose. Is the winter ever going to end? Am I ever going to get over these colds? I need to follow Susan's advice and go figure out what I need to infuse in my backyard so I can get a little bit more healthy. All right? Okay. Dearly departed, Devochka, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's Radio Orbit. My name is Mike Hagan. I'll be back in just a few minutes. All right, that's Dearly Departed. And it's Mike, you listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Music from Devochka tonight. And talk about super melodrama. How about it, huh? Dearly Departed. For those who've loved and lost. Okay. Let's see. Phones, if anybody wants to call, you're welcome to. 573-443-8255. All right. 573-443-8255. Love to say hello. And let's see, what else in the meantime? Rudolf Steiner. There's a thread on the forum about Steiner. And the only reason I bring it up is because I'm actually reading this book right now by Peter Tompkins, the guys who wrote The Secret Life of Plants. And this book is called Secrets of the Soil. And I'm only, I don't know, just a few chapters into it or whatever, but dig this. It begins with a quote from Steiner, from Rudolf Steiner, and this is the quote. It says, "So long as one feeds on food from unhealthy soil, the spirit will lack the stamina to free itself from the prison of the body." Whoa. And I think that this is a real truism. In other words, this book goes on to talk about the degradation of the soil, essentially, what we've done since the Industrial Revolution, primarily, but for a long time, even before that, but really supercharged the devastation you know, since about, 1880. And now the soil, everywhere essentially, you know, the soils are, well, they're just out of balance and unhealthy, and they require a whole bunch of, you know, man-made chemicals and this sort of thing to produce anything. And they become more full and maybe produce more, but they lack the nutrients and they lack the power and the spirit that the native plant has, because the plant itself derives all of that stuff from the soil. The soil is the great mediator, you know, between the rocks and the, you know, the things that make up the hard mantle of the earth. The soil is the mediator. The organisms in the soil dissolve and move all that stuff around from rocks and lava flows and all this sort of thing. When all of that is ruined and used or whatever, you know, it takes a long time. You know, when you tear it out of balance, it's not that easy to get it back. You may get a new balance of some other sort that you don't expect, some weird, you know, chaotic attractor that just throws everything out of whack. And this is sort of the danger and the thrill right now. Nobody knows what's going to happen. The idea that anyone's in control of this is amazing. Read The Lost Language of Plants that Stephen Buhner wrote. You'll know very clearly that no one is in control of what's happening on this planet. We are essentially in the middle of a gigantic chemistry experiment. All of us. You can analyze the blood of every single person, I think, on this planet now and find things that should not be there. Now, what does that mean? In an evolutionary sense, what it means is, people who have a genetic structure that can handle all of these different substances better than others, those are the ones that will, you know, move forward. And what we know about evolution is sort of funny like that. You know, a lot of people have this idea that the way evolution works is that there's a standard expression of a genotype, and from out of the standard expression, mutations get thrown out every so often, regardless of what the of the cause, you know, whether it's influx of cosmic radiation or a change in diet or whatever. But at any rate, mutations get thrown into the mix. And a lot of people tend to think that when these mutations are thrown into the mix, when a good mutation shows up, it just sort of takes over. Well, that's usually not the way it happens, really. The way it happens is that mutations are thrown up all the time, and people who are functioning, you know, perfectly well could have a mutation in a particular gene or set of genes, and those genes could be of no particular consequence in the current environment. But the way evolution works is when environments change. When the environment changes, then all of a sudden mutant genotype expressions can become much more significant than they were in the previous environment. You know what I'm saying? In other words, a gene that wasn't really being expressed because of the environmental, just the reality of the environmental situation, can then become of enormous consequence when the environment shifts. And then those that have that particular setup can move forward. And maybe something like this is happening. Who's to say? But people, you know, even in science, people talk about evolution in a sort of, you know, Edwardian nostalgic sense, as if it's not still happening. Well, it is. And the one thing that drives evolution is pressure. Pressure. And the pressure is building. And we haven't even seen the pressure yet. You think this is pressure? This isn't pressure. This is the long garden party before pressure. You know, where we drink fancy German beers and talk on internet radio and, worry about when we'll have time to figure out what the plants are doing in our backyards. This is not pressure. But, it's closer to pressure than it was 1,000 years ago, that's for sure. So, We'll have to see where the whole thing goes. I don't know. Let's see. Before Mars Global Surveyor failed, it saw stunning evidence of recent water on Mars. This is something that Kent linked up over on the forum, and I once again encourage everyone to go over to Kent Stedman's website at cyberspaceorbit.com and check out the work that he's been doing over there for a long, long time. But with regard to Mars, you know, more and more evidence that if there's not water there now, and I think there is. I mean, I think we have evidence that there's liquid water on Mars right now. I think there are a lot of people that would agree with that. If there's liquid water, you know, well, at least on this planet, that means life, essentially. So who knows what's going on up there on the red planet. But Kent Stedman's interested in looking into it. You can check it out on the web at cyberspaceorbit.com. Here's a juicy bit for you, right? From a non-verifiable he said, she said sort of story. But Ashley has a friend whose father was CIA, apparently. At least this is what she says. And he's quite old now and retired. And she was lamenting that her dad drinks so much these days and that he's having a difficult time in his own personal life. But anyway, drinks a lot. And anyway, one of the few things that his daughter knows about his work is that he was involved in the Viking missions of the 1970s. And Ashley told me this, and I was like, whoa, I'm like, CIA involved in the Viking missions? You know? I thought NASA was a civilian agency, transparent and available to all. I guess not. And, you know, those early Viking images showed, you know, an atmosphere perhaps, and I think that they did soil samples that probably showed life, but, you know, that just didn't fit with the cultural paradigm that we're being fed more and more harshly. Who knows what's happening up there on Mars? We'll see. One of these days, we'll take a flight up there ourselves, find out for ourselves what's happening. Let's see what Ray Kurzweil is talking about these days. By the way, I haven't even looked at the phone. If you've been calling, I wasn't even looking at if it was flashing. Call back if you were calling. All right. The number is 573-443-8255. And I should read this, too, as a matter of fact. Tomorrow, today, is tax day. And Mark Heim will have a special tax day evening edition tonight, 6 p.m. Hardly anybody likes paying taxes, but he's going to take some calls and find out how you feel about the way your tax money is being spent. What would you rather see it go to? Is the tax system fair? If not, how would you make it fairer? And he encourages you to share your ideas and participate in this forum on the air. It's coming your way tonight, 6 p.m. on Community Radio, 89.5 FM, Mark Heim, and Evening Edition. Talking about taxes tonight at 6, all right? Call them in and let them know what you think, okay? All right, Ray Kurzweil. He has an interesting website, and here's another interesting approach to building intelligent machines, this thing that's called hierarchical temporal memory, HTM they call it. These machines, they're trying to build these machines that model the human neocortex. It's a pretty amazing story here. That's in the, I think it's in the Journal for like Electrical Engineering or something. Let me go actually pull up the original article and I'll read a little bit to you here. The guy who wrote it was named Jeff Hawkins. Why can't a computer be more like a brain? By the age of 5, a child can understand spoken language, distinguish a cat from a dog, play a game of catch. These are 3 of the many things humans find easy that computers and robots currently cannot do. Despite decades of research, we computer scientists have not figured out how to do basic tasks of perception and robotics with a computer. Our few successes at building intelligent machines are notable, equally for what they can and cannot do. Computers at long last can play winning chess, but the program that can beat the world champion can't talk about chess, let alone learn backgammon. Today's programs at best solve specific problems where humans have broad and flexible capabilities computers do not. Perhaps we've been going about it in the wrong way. For 50 years, computer scientists have been trying to make computers intelligent while mostly ignoring the one thing that is intelligent, the human brain. Even the so-called neural network programming techniques take as their starting point a highly simplistic view of how the brain operates. I'm going to stop there. It goes on, but it's an interesting look at artificial intelligence and what they're trying to do, I still think one of the major hurdles that has to be overcome in a linguistic sense is the difference between the brain and the mind. I still see way too much assumption that the mind, which is essentially our ability to cognize, it hasn't been isolated to the brain. And this is why I think that they're sort of chasing a ghost with regard to artificial intelligence right now. I think they're very, very far off the mark because, and I don't even know that the mark is, you know, something that you can put your finger on. The mind is outside of space, it seems like to me. It exists outside of the body, yet it's somehow generated by the body. Or maybe not generated by the body, but it takes a home in the body or something like this. I don't know, but, you know, when you're dreaming, the mind is outside of the body. When you take psilocybin, the mind is outside of the body. When you have a near-death experience or an out-of-body experience, you know, a lucid dream, the mind is out of the body. When you daydream, you know, when you daydream, the mind is somewhere else. And I don't know where it's generated from or where it comes from, but, you know, I think one thing that would help them with artificial intelligence is if they concentrate on the heart and the connection between systems and not just, you know, designate the brain as the almighty computer and relegate everything else to the sort of trash bin and count on the brain for everything. I mean, this is what this guy's actually been talking about here, Jeff Hawkins, the idea that they've been going at it the wrong way. He says they're looking for the, going back to the one thing that is intelligent, and he says the human brain. Well, he doesn't even mention the human heart. This is where intelligence comes from. Intellect comes from the brain, perhaps, not intelligence. Anyway, who's to say about the future of artificial intelligence? Ray Kurzweil's got a lot of interesting stories up here, though, I tell you that much. Here's another one. Post-mortal syndrome. Listen to this. Cosmos Magazine has posted the first of 56 episodes of Post-Mortal Syndrome, a sci-fi thriller about life and intelligence extension by Damien Broderick and Barbara Lamar, available for free download. It's allegorical rather than scientifically exact, a sort of optimistic answer to Flowers for Algernon, and it's an attempt to reach and entertain a large non-specialist audience with some upbeat transhumanist ideas, Broderick told Kurzweil AI. Anyway, Damien Broderick, he's a sci-fi writer, and I think he works at in Australia, one of the universities there, but I imagine that that's probably interesting. Post-mortal syndrome. I love it. I think I have that. Nigerian students power up their laptops. Wow. The one laptop per child program in Africa and the Middle East has chosen a school 10 miles outside of Nigeria's capital, Abuja, to deploy the company's first child-friendly laptops to the region. Now, some would say that's a good thing, some would say it's bad. Regardless, the web continues to work its way even through the, you know, the horrific slums of Africa. New laws of robotics proposed for U.S. killbots. I'll read that later. Let's take a phone call here. Radio Orbit, who's this? Hi.
Yeah, this is Deborah. I had several things to tell you, and you keep ignoring my phone calls.
Well, now I see it. I'm sorry. You know me.
I had several things here. I wanted to tell you I went to Cooper's Landing to hear Iliame, the music group, so check them out. They're supposed to come back in May.
Okay.
But they were really good. I went to a West African dance class on Saturday. I took my granddaughter with me. We had a lot of fun.
Oh,
but
cool.
I also went to the Barnes & Noble's because my other granddaughter, who is a teenager, wants to be a botanist, and so I'm getting her the secret language of plants.
Wonderful. Yeah, yeah.
And when
so
I was there, I went, it was rainy, and I just stayed there, and I went back to the back where the philosophy and alternative thinking, and I found this book of lies, and Paul Loffoli's paintings. I guess you have probably read that. And yeah. Terrence McKenna is in there.
In Crowley's Book of Lies?
Well, Crowley's got articles in there, too.
Uh-huh.
But and women, I haven't bought it, but there's some women mentioned. So it's a whole bunch of different authors.
Huh, awesome.
Also, I have Richard Tarnas, a tape. It would be on an old cassette from 1994.
Really?
When I went out to the international conference out there in San Francisco, and I was going to try and find that and dig it up. I've been kind of shifting some of my stored items around, but I'll make a copy for you if I find it, because it's interesting.
I'd love to listen to it. He's great.
He was a good workshop presenter at the time. Oh, the other thing I wanted to tell you was I am reading Barbara Tedlock's book on the woman in the shaman's body.
Good.
And I had started that before, and I was so messed up and not understanding what happened to me in that peanut butter junk.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the cap with the numbers on it that it just really kind of, I had no idea. Every time it hit me, I didn't know what it was, and I couldn't always concentrate. So now I am really picking up on that book and, you know, my own place in life.
Good.
I have all kinds of comments written on the borders and stuff. Plus, I have the Popol Vuh book. I also picked up the Chief Joseph book just by accident, and next to it, real close, was this Shroom book at Barnes & Noble's by Letcher, and here's this whole section on McKenna, and it was so funny. I was sitting there on the floor leaning against a pillar, like close to the snack bar, and there's just this whole section on Terrence. It was really interesting, so I would never have picked it up. It just kind of spoke to me.
Yeah.
Kind of behind, but beside the Indian section. So, and because of the artwork that I've done with that Lady in the Mushroom thing.
Right, right. I know.
So I just wanted to tell you these things are all kind of woven together.
I tell you, the synchronicity is overwhelming right now. So, well, I'm glad that you're paying attention and you're doing great stuff, and your artwork that you've been doing is wonderful. And I'm glad that you're still doing all the work with the young people too, Deborah. So, thank you.
Another thing, do you know who Filaldo is, Albert?
Yes.
Filaldo, the Four Insights?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I've been trying to get him to come on the program.
Well, there's a new book out, and I've just ordered it. It traces the roots of yoga and shamanism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that connects with the Tedlock's book.
Mm-hmm.
But,
sure.
And it explores the principles of the divine feminine and the shamanistic roots in the spiritual text.
Amazing.
You know, like the Yoga Sutras. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I thought, well, try to get a hold of him. Okay.
All right, I'll do it.
All right, bye.
Thank you very much, but Deborah, take care of yourself, right?
Bye.
All right, everybody, it's about that time. We're going to finish things off here and play another piece of music. We'll come back next week. We've got Bruce Raphael. We'll talk about this amazing archaeological adventure that he's been on in China for the last couple of years. And lots of good stuff coming up. Thanks, everyone who's been listening. Check us out on the web, www.mikehagan.com. Thanks to Susan Weed. Wonderful stuff, and I appreciate the time she spent with us. Also, to everybody listening to the program, thank you as well. And we'll come back and catch up with you next week. Okay, one more here from Devochka. Wonderful music on the web at devochka.net. And you can also hook up with them through my site as well in the music archives. Okay, all right, one more time. It's Radio Orbit. Mike Hagan signing off. Stick around. We got Ruth coming up with some good music to keep you going for the next few hours, and we'll catch up with you next week. This one's called You Already Know. Take care, you guys. Thank you.
This will end.